This morning, as you may remember if you were here last week, we're moving on to week two of the four-week series on the basic principles of the science of mime, which is the teaching based on the ideas of Dr. Ernest Holmes that he first started writing about in the 1920s. Now, another name for this teaching is religious science, and some people have a little trouble with that name, but it's not Scientology, it's not Christian science, but we call it religious science because what this teaching does is it combines the clarity and the intelligence of science with what we might call the inner wisdom and the awareness of true spirituality. This is also not some special revelation that was made to just one person. One of the things I like about it is Dr. Holmes never claimed to be a prophet or a channeler or a guru or a messiah. Instead, he simply saw himself not even as a teacher, he saw himself as a student. And he meant for this teaching to be an accumulation of all the mental and spiritual knowledge that has been collected, examined, and argued about between men and women ever since we all began wondering why we're here and what it is we're supposed to be doing while we are here. So this teaching is by no means the one and only way to spiritual fulfillment. There are a lot of different ways for us all to receive our own spiritual fulfillment. But I will tell you honestly that in my experience, and I've studied a lot, this is the best way that I have found to expand my spirituality. And I feel that if you can get a good handle on just the few basic ideas that we're covering in these four talks this month, you may find out what I found out 23 years ago when I walked in here, because I have found as a spiritual practice, this stuff really works. Now, last week I talked about the idea of this thing that we call God, this creative power, this source of all life that Dr. Holmes calls the thing itself. And we talked about the fact that this power supports all of its creation equally. It's not something that exists only outside of our human experience. It's not something that's present in one place called heaven and not anywhere else. And it doesn't give any more of itself to any one person than it does to any other. This power, we said, is completely present in every one of us all the time, ready to create something newer and greater in our experience than whatever existed before. In fact, to take my whole talk last week and to put it into one brief sentence, all this power does is create. That is all it does. Now, what does it create? That part's easy. All it creates is life. It creates everything in the universe, and it creates all the different infinite relationships that can possibly exist between all of those things. And how does it create? Well, that part's pretty easy, too. Because as a perfect intelligence, it creates the only way that a perfect intelligence can, which is by using this intelligence to turn thought into form, to turn ideas into things and experiences. Now, the reason this is important for us to understand is because, and this is the gist of today's talk, you and I are actually the way in which this creative process does what it does. In other words, borrowing the title from this section of the introduction in Dr. Holmes's book, The Science of Mind, we are the way it works. Now, I'm going to admit right up front, and we all know this if we've had conversations with friends who have more traditional leanings, that this idea of God working through us and as us is a very difficult idea for a lot of the world to accept. However, the reason it is difficult for so many people to accept this idea is not because they don't want it to be true, because most people would love to believe that God was this responsive energy they could think into, and whatever they thought into it would show up. They want to have this idea, this good buddy that's going to support them all the time in whatever they do. Always there, always ready to do what they wanted. They would like to believe that, but they just can't for a number of reasons. For one thing, most people cannot believe the presence and the power of God as a responsive energy in them because they have bought into the false belief that they are actually separated from God. And this is a term that we call duality. You may hear me say that in other talks. Duality is the idea of God up there and us down here. God talks, we listen. God commands, we obey. All the stuff we heard as children. So duality is the spiritually debilitating idea that we can actually be separated from the only real source of love, joy, peace, freedom, prosperity, and perfect healing that exists, just to name a few of the greatest gifts that exist in life. In fact, that one idea, duality, is probably the cause, either directly or indirectly, of more suffering than any other theological concept in history, which is why we need to get past it. You see, if it were true that we are separate from God, and it's not, there's no doubt that this would be a very, very different world. Because if God were not present and active in the world, expressing itself through me as love and success and creativity and as the fulfillment of our dreams and desires, if it wasn't working through us, there'd be no point in us being here. Why would it need a middleman or a middlewoman? Because both creation and evolution, and when I say evolution, I'm not talking about the argument in the newspaper between the fundamentalists and the scientists. When I'm talking about evolution, I mean the constant growth and expansion, the evolving of life in every way, not just through our physical form, but also through science and technology. So creation and evolution do not happen to us, they actually happen through us. They happen by means of us. We are the ones who create. We are the ones who evolve. So that must mean that we are the creative power of God at work in the world. You see, this thing that we call life, what we call the world and everything that happens in it, is nothing more and nothing less than people thinking, interacting, and making decisions and creating experiences and relationships out of those decisions. So the world that we talk about is not a place, it is an ongoing process. The world is a consciousness, the world is a state of mind, it's an invisible mental and spiritual construct being played out in physical form. And our world changes as our beliefs change. We see it every day because our beliefs determine our thoughts determine our actions, and our actions create our experiences. For example, economic slowdowns like the one that everybody thinks is going on right now do not happen because there isn't enough money. Somebody didn't sneak in and pull a whole bunch of money out of the world. Economic slowdowns happen because money stops flowing freely when people become afraid, when people begin to believe more in lack and limitation than they do in prosperity and abundance, and we tend to do that in cycles. In a similar way, wars, like the ones that are going on all over the world right now, wars happen when people start believing that violence can actually be an effective way to create peace. I mean, how crazy is that? We cannot bomb our way into peace, and neither can anyone else. Now, in both cases, just two examples, economics and violence, whatever, the resulting disruption and devastation comes about in the world not because of some power out there, but because of a collective belief that we all have as a race that is not in harmony with the possibilities of that the universal intelligence shows us and is constantly offering to us. Now, this is the same with addiction. It's the same with illiteracy. It's the same with disease. It's the same with child abuse. It is the same with every other social problem, racism, homophobia, any of these things, any problem that shows up on the world stage. So it should come as no surprise to us once we start to become a little more enlightened, which means spiritually aware, that it works the same way on the individual level. When we believe that we are separated from God or separated from our good, which is the same thing, God and good, interchangeable, we get scared. We really do. We get stressed. We become confused. We may even become desperate, and then we start to feel helpless and powerless. And because it's hard to make intelligent decisions when we are in that helpless, powerless frame of mind, that's when we begin to act unintelligently, even though we are still, as always, completely immersed in a perfect intelligence. When we think this way, either individually or collectively as a race, the logical result of our confused thinking shows up in the world or in our life as a problem that we then have to solve, which, as difficult as the problem might be while we're dealing with it, seems to make perfect sense to us. We think it's normal because for us and the world, it's always been that way. But at some point in our spiritual evolution, we're going to have to recognize that what we call society and interaction, family, whatever it is simply our collective experience on the planet, and it can never be any better than our collective beliefs. The world that we create, the world that we live in, the world that we are going to give to our children and our grandchildren can never be better than the sum total of all the thinking and interacting that's going on between us. That's why Einstein said the problems that we are facing cannot be solved at the level of thinking we were at when we created them. It's true. We've got to think at a higher level because the problems that we have in our life or in the world never ever come from out there. They always come from in here. This is where they are caused. This is how they are maintained. So an intelligent, workable, spiritually grounded, lasting solution to any problem that we have, large or small, can only come when we get back to the realization that we are never separated from our greater good. We can't be because we are the way it works. Now, another reason that a lot of people find it so difficult to accept the part that they play in creating their own experience is because even though they believe very much in a God who is good and powerful and loving and intelligent, they just don't believe in themselves. They just don't believe in themselves. And they also don't believe in the rightness of the desires that fill their mind every day. They don't believe they have the right to tell this magnificent, generous power that has given them everything already what they want. They may not even believe that they deserve to have the things that they desire, so they can't conceive that God would want them to have those things either. Of course, it's perfectly understandable why we feel this way, because many of us were taught from a very early age that desiring something was selfish. We were told by our priests and ministers and nuns and teachers, even our parents, that if God decided to give us something, that's fine, but we should never presume that we deserve it. And that's all part of that old life is suffering and I'm just a poor sinner mentality, you know, that we had drummed into us early on, which is nothing more than spiritual nonsense. That's what Dr. Holmes said, and I agree with it. And if we feel that way, even occasionally, and sometimes we fall into it, we need to get over it. Just as surely as we need to know that God is a loving intelligence that's always with us and supports us completely, like we talked about last week, we also need to know that we deserve everything God could possibly offer us, which is actually quite a lot if you think about it. We deserve to enjoy every single moment and every single part of our time on this planet. That's why we need to start thinking of ourselves automatically, reflexively, all the time as a perfect expression, of God's infinite and unquenchable desire to create a world which is loving and prosperous and exciting and creative and just plain fun to be in. That is the way we need to think. And we are here as the vehicle to make that happen. Now, if we can't believe it about ourselves, we need to at least teach this to the children. We do. That's what J.D. Jackson and her staff and volunteers are going to be doing. She does it every week up during the second service. Now, you look at Tanish. You look at the children who were raised into adulthood in this kind of thinking. I sometimes wish that I had had this when I was 4 or 5 years old because it would have saved me a lot of trouble over the last 50 years. I could be sleeping or playing golf this morning instead of trying to repeat this stuff. Then again, I would not have gotten the benefit of all the experience that I've got, you know? And I'd have a lot fewer stories to share with you also, too. You know, It's one thing to believe in a higher power, whatever shape, whatever form, whatever way that takes for us. I think that's important. But to live our life in the way that we truly want to live it, we also have to believe something else. We have to believe that we all have within us, because once again, we are perfect ideas in the mind of God, we all have to know that we have within us all the power that we could ever need to create whatever we choose to create. Because you are the only thinker and the only decision maker in your life, and I am the only thinker in mine. So our thoughts, powered by our heart, powered by our emotions, this passion for life and passion that we have to express ourselves, that is what creates our every experience, everyone we've ever had, everyone we ever will have. Not only that, our ability to create cannot be limited by anyone else's opinion, criticism, or opposition. Not at all. Because we make the choices in our life. Nobody can do it for us. Nobody is supposed to do it for us. We are the only ones who know both our own deep inner desires, like Richie was singing about in that beautiful song, and we are the only ones who know our level of willingness to do whatever needs to be done to make those desires come true. So consciously and deliberately, not by default, consciously and deliberately focusing our creative energy, which means our heart and our mind and our intent, that is what causes this power to do for us what it's always doing in the world, which is creating all things new. All things new. This is what I believe. This one thing is what I believe. If there is anything in your life that you want, or anything in my life that I want, and I mean anything you want that you believe for your own reasons will put a song in your heart and a smile on your lips and a twinkle in your eye, whatever that happens to be, I believe there is a way for you or me to either get it or accomplish it. There has to be. How do I know this? Because your desire for something good had to come from somewhere. It had to come from somewhere. And the only place it could come from is the source of all good. So if that desire that we have comes from a perfect intelligence that is constantly supporting a greater expression of life for you and me and everyone else, and if that power is what we are made of, then there has got to be something in us that knows the way to make our desires come true. I mean, that makes perfect sense. Why else would a perfect intelligence give us a desire if it would not also give us, without giving us, the ability to fulfill it? But if we don't believe that God, this good, this presence, is right here where we are, or if we don't recognize what it's offering to us, just recognizing that we have a desire is not going to do us any good. We have to know that there is a way for us to use this power, and that we are meant to discover what that way is. That's why we have to understand that we are the way it works, because in here is where the answer is. Now, in the book, The Science of Mind, Dr. Holmes writes this in this section of the introduction. He says, "This thing works for us by working through us and as us always. It cannot work for us in any other way." And then he says, I love this, he starts to wax poetic. It's kind of pretty. He says, "It spreads itself over the whole universe and shouts at us from every angle, but it can only become power to us when we recognize it as power." Now, this is the key to our being able to use this kind of power in a productive and effective and scientific way. And by scientific, I mean a way that is predictable, understandable, and repeatable. Works for everyone who uses it the way it works. Because it doesn't matter how great our idea of God is if we don't have a great enough belief in ourselves to go along with it. And that belief is much easier to achieve when we stop and look around us at nature and the world and see how this power is showing us all the time what it can do for everyone who uses it intelligently. I mean, nature gives us all sorts of examples if we would watch. The soil that a farmer uses to grow the crops isn't created because it belongs to a certain farmer. It acts on whatever seed is put into it, just like our ideas going into the world, no matter who puts it there, because that's what the soil does. But the soil won't do anything until someone or something places the seed within it. The atmosphere, the air that we breathe, is available to everyone, but we all have to do our own breathing. And if we personally choose not to breathe because we're trying to get even with somebody, that kind of thing that we do, we will suffocate, not them. That's what we know. Now, that doesn't mean the air isn't there for us. It simply means we are capable of making a conscious but foolish decision not to let it do what it is its nature to do. In the same way, on a spiritual level, God's good, which may sound a little bit religious, but all we mean when we say God's good is the basic essence of all life. That good is available to us all the time, but we have to claim it in order to get it. Because this creative power shares itself with all of us. We don't have to do anything special to attract it. We don't have to do anything to make our ideas creative. They already are. We don't have to beg God to be creative on our behalf. All of that stuff has been taken care of long before we were born. All we have to do is to allow this power to flow through us without letting our own individual stuff get in the way. Now, I want to tell you a quick story. It's not so much a story. It's kind of an observation or a metaphor that I saw from a few years ago. I was sitting in my backyard, and this was before the drought got bad, and I was going to water the grass. So I rummaged around in the garage, and I found a sprinkler. You know, one of those things with the curved top that goes, that kind of thing. Everybody know those? So I went. I hadn't used it for a while. Hooked up the hose and turned it on. And I was watching it, and I noticed that the spray was very, very strange. From a couple of the holes, it would shoot like 30 feet. A couple of the holes were shooting like 3 feet. Some of them weren't, no water was coming through at all. And I looked at it, and it struck me all of a sudden that the water pressure in there was the same behind all of the holes. It was exactly the same. But only a certain amount was coming through. Now, if you think about it, that's a perfect analogy for the way we live, because God is the power that's always present, the pressure that is right there for every single one of them. Life is the sprinkler. Guess what we are? We're the holes, okay? That's what we are. We're the holes. And our thoughts either block or open up the hole. You see, because our good, this pressure that wants to explode into our life, is always there as an unlimited mental and spiritual flow of ideas and intelligence and energy, the only way that it can be limited is if we block the mental and block the flow with mental and spiritual obstructions. And we all know what those are: fear, anger, confusion, ignorance, ego, arrogance. God, I could go till next week. This is great. Stupidity. Somebody once said that the two most abundant elements in the universe are hydrogen and stupidity. I always thought that was really true, you know? You know, those are the kind of ideas that restrict the divine flow in our experience so that it doesn't work for us nearly as well as it could. Now, our attitude doesn't restrict God, because nothing can limit God. Our attitude just limits the amount of good, God, good, whatever, that we personally are able to accept. On the other hand, if we recognize that we are the only outlet for God in our life, or for good in our life, that is, if we open up all the little sprinkler holes that we are, all of the channels of faith and love and belief and understanding, the flow that comes through us cannot help but increase, whether that flow comes in the form of love or money or success or health. I mean, the sad fact of the matter is, many of us started closing off our connection with Source very soon after we were born. In fact, there are some people, you know them as well as I do, who have been completely closed for so long that they don't even remember what it feels like to be open. They don't even remember what it feels like to be a child. They don't remember what it feels like to be expressing life in a natural, joyful way. For those people, everything is a struggle. Now, granted, we all feel that way sometimes. I mean, we all get that feeling sometimes that things aren't flowing, that nothing's coming through. But the good news is, through this teaching and teachings like it, we can always consciously change our experience by opening up and letting this ever-present source of supply do what it wants to do, which is to flow through us into the world unrestricted. Now, how do we do this? Well, for one thing, and this is a big one, we can stop being so afraid all of the time. And that may sound like something that's easy to say but hard to do, but it probably won't happen immediately. But we can start practicing being fearless all the time, any time we want. And there's no time like the present. We can also stop being so angry. We can stop being so resentful and so irritated. And not only can we stop things, we can start doing things. We can start being kind. We can start giving of ourselves, of our energy, of our money, of our time, all of these things without worrying so much that there won't be enough. Once again, this is not about finding more of God in the world. This is about recognizing that all of the good that we could ever need is already here, expressing itself as us. And not only is it expressing itself through us and as us, it's all around us too. It's everywhere we look, creating in other people, if not in us, prosperity, success, loving relationships, and healings of every kind. So the only decision that we have to make is whether we are willing to allow this power to create those things through us in our life. In other words, are we willing to fulfill our divine role as the way it works? Now, though it is not common practice among most of the world's religions, any spiritual teaching or any spiritual belief which is worth anything at all to the people who practice it should support a consciousness that encourages people to recognize their connection with God and their oneness with all of life. Any teaching should teach that. Because people who feel that kind of closeness with their source, that kind of immediate response of God to their thoughts, and seeing the world around them being affected by those thoughts, those kind of people tend to be very healthy, mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. In fact, William James, the great philosopher in the early 1900s, called New Thought teachings like this one the religion of the healthy-minded. It was a wonderful phrase, the religion of the healthy-minded. If somebody asks you what your religion is, give them that answer, okay? It's time we started to realize the truth about ourselves. And the truth is that we are not poor, helpless, sick, or afraid beings stuck in whatever unpredictable, difficult situation the world throws at us. We are co-creators with God of our experience. We are that. If you haven't heard that phrase before, start thinking about yourself that way. But if you've been coming here for a while, you've heard me say it more than once. But even if you have heard it, start to remind yourself, I am a co-creator with God of my experience. Because it really is the truth. It really is the truth. At least that's what I believe. Because it makes sense at every level. It makes sense because it's the truth about God. It makes sense because it's the truth about the world. It is the truth in your life, and it is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. Thank you. All right. Thank you. Let's take a few moments for ourselves. Give ourselves the gift not only of our own awareness, as we do so often at this time in the service, but the gift of clarity, the gift of knowing that God is present in us, with us, and as us. It is expressing in the world, and we are a part of the divine nature that is expressing in the world. So whenever we create, it is God creating. Whenever we love, it is God loving. Whenever we express compassion, it is God expressing compassion. Whenever we are a force for peace, justice, and equality, This is the presence of God appearing in the world. It does not appear in any other way. Peace does not float through the air and alight in certain places. Abundance does not express itself without someone or something to be abundant, to express and to enjoy that abundance. Healing does not happen from afar. Healing happens from within. As we recognize these truths, we begin to look at ourselves not with ego and arrogance that we are so special, but with a true sense of love and humility for the gift that we have been given. And to recognize that this gift has been given to every person, so we honor the presence of Spirit in them with the presence of Spirit in us. The word namaste, recognizing Spirit, recognizing itself. So we recognize this presence in the world. We recognize that the chaos and confusion that we see does not need to stay. It is a false idea appearing real, and that appearance has no more power than we give it. So instead of fighting for peace, we begin to see peace everywhere and do whatever feels right within us to manifest that peace. Instead of trying to create healing, we allow healing to take place. Instead of trying to get abundance, we allow abundance to express itself through us. This is the power we have. I invite you to take a few moments in the silence of your own heart and mind, and in this silence, simply know the truth. Don't feel the presence of God. Feel God itself as what you are. One more step, just that one more step past the old ideas into recognizing Spirit as what we are. Take these moments for yourself in silence. With gratitude for this awareness and a clear understanding of its sacred significance in our life, we accept this truth, we honor it, we embrace it. We realize that this is truly the way we are meant to live in the world, as divine beings living in a spiritual universe, completely connected and expressing the one divine source of all love, life, and power. This is who we are, this is what we are, this is what the world is. Knowing this, we accept this truth with gratitude, grateful for all we have been given and all we have yet to give. And as we accept this truth as our own, we release it into consciousness, letting it be the truth for us from this moment on in every part of our life, and so it is.